All right, we're at Lagunitas Brewing Company in Petaluma. We're gonna be brewing some hop water today and talking with their rock star team in their brew lab. We're gonna tell you how to make hop water, all the secrets and tips that you need to make amazing hop water at home. Check it out. All right, we're at Lagunitas. I'm sitting with Jeremy, Mark, and Brian. Let's do some introductions. Tell us a little bit about your brewing history and your background here at Lagunitas.
Well, my name's Jeremy Marshall, brewmaster, brew monster. Although I'd like to say nobody really ever masters this, especially like when you end up covered with yeast and hops, you're humble, and then you smell even worse. But I've worked here for 20 years, seen the brewery grow a lot. It feels like I've worked at a lot of different breweries. Graduated UC Davis 2003, and give the other guys a chance to talk.
Mark Hughes, a specialty brewing manager, my title. I've been here 15 years. So I was UC Davis 2008. My first kind of pursuit was in music production and more creative. And then I studied science to go into biochemistry, biotech. And that was all fun and interesting, but mm-hmm. You can use the same equipment to brew beer. And I'd done an internship in both industries and came back, actually went to more beer like a maniac for a couple years, trying to brew as much as I could. Had the dream, you know, to be a brewer. And then at one point I just Googled, brewing school, and that's when
UC
Davis came, and I had experience in science. So next thing I knew, I was graduating, and somebody had just lost a job here. So back then, that's how you were the only way to get a job. And so I was lucky enough to be here for
living the dream.
Yeah. Brian Donaldson, Brewing Innovation Manager. So all these titles are very similar, and we do similar things. I've been here about 10 years off and on, and been through quality, ran sensory for a while before I got in with these guys, and we do all the new product development. I also went to UC Davis, but while they were trained to be brewers, I was trained to be a nerd. I had a master's in food science, but I did study with Charlie Bamforth during that time, and really have learned on the fly how to actually be a brewer, mostly while here, and somehow we get by.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having us, guys. All right, let's jump in. So we made hop water today. Tell us a little bit about the history of hop water and one of your other products. I love the hi-fi.
So the Germans have been taking hops and doing things alternative, like hop sodas and hop waters for a long time. And then during Prohibition, you know, all of a sudden you have this thing that only has one application, beer, and you had to explore other things. And then we feel like hop water is like not an original, you know, new thing. You brewed a beer, you forgot the malt. But we were really looking for an alcohol platform to infuse with cannabis. So this was 2017. Brian did all the extractions. And the cannabis emulsion does bring over a flavor and a certain bitterness of its own. So we had to kind of reverse engineer what the process would be for Hi-Fi Hops, which is, you know, still in existence today. It kind of lives within California because of federal legality. You know, we're playing within the state rec market. And then Hoppy Refresher kind of butted out of that. And then what didn't really know, am I on the non-alcoholic beer space, which was pretty nascent in 2017, or am I a mixer? Am I a water? Distributors didn't really know what to do with it. And it just kind of lived on its own. And then the pandemic really brought about like a kind of a better for you health consciousness. You know, everyone was thinking about, you know, health in a new way. And it kind of exploded to the point that, you know, now lots of people are doing them. And, you know, we're happy to see any home for hops is a happy outcome for brewers like us.
So. Yeah, certainly it was something that we did just on a, we joked about.
Yeah, we did. We used to joke
water.
That when I first started working here, we said, wow, they dry hop every single beer they make, even the Pilsner and the Stout. Do you guys also dry hop your malt silo and your yeast brinks. And it turns out that dry hopping your yeast tank is kind of has an interesting tie-in to the New England thing, like hopping yeast and active yeast. And it really was like Mark says, everything we joke about, just give it some time.
We're still waiting for a barrel-aged water.
Barrel-aged water. We are waiting on barrel-aged water. But someone, business opportunities.
We had joked about it, and then there was one company that had out there that had decided to commercialize, and we tried it, and it just tasted like just like extract. And back then, you know, the extracts weren't as good as they are now. And it's thanks to the fusion of the cannabis industry and really the pressures of things like hop water that the extracts are getting a lot better. But it was another one of those things. We had it. We're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
We could do better than this. And that's where literally dried it, dry hopped tank and kind of took it from there. Realized that we had to refine it and did lots of little bench tops and things like that.
And your utilization is very poor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good for hop farmers.
So let's talk about hop water. Let's start with the water. You know, what we do with the water, we pre-boiled it. Let's talk a little bit about that. Acidification, like all the different, we added some calcium chloride as well. Tell me about the water. I guess it's kind of the biggest part of hop water, right?
We just made some assumptions that a little bit of minerals is good for hop water in the same sense that it's good for beer. It doesn't mean that we're right. We were looking between calcium chloride and gypsum, which is calcium sulfate. We weren't trying to accentuate the bitterness here. Sulfate kind of takes the hop bitterness and sharpens it, if you will. So we went with the chloride route, which is more mellow, smooth. We went very, very low. I think if you did a analysis, we'd be between 50 and 100 parts per million in the finished product. Estimate. We did add food grade acid under the assumption that hop utilization decreases with a lower pH. So this is all like letting the science take over and kind of working backwards from how we envision the product. But you know, hop wise, Mark very much took the lead on this project and some of the more interesting things that you may have noticed that we did today.
So yeah, let's talk. So we boiled our water, and why did we do that, Mark?
Well, certainly to sterilize it.
Sterilize it.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the most important things. Making this product is it's not going to be as protected as beer, and certainly you know we all know that you know having good water is a good idea, but. Also to get a little bit of BU in there, which will
by boiling it, we're also driving off any oxygen right in there?
You're mostly deaerating it, whereas, you know, yeah, here at the brewery, we have just giant tanks of deaerated water that we can access, you know, sterile, you know, clean deaerated water. You know, if the home brewer, would be more of a challenge.
So we, you know, we boiled the water, we added the lactic acid before we added the hops. And let's just talk about that, why we added the acid prior to the hops.
That was mostly in the testing the theory that we're not going to isomerize as much of the alpha and not get too much bitterness. So we're really trying to favor, there's so many different ways you can make a hop water. And now everyone's trying to sell an extract or a terpene kit or you know, just add this. And we do feel that the hop pellets are contributing tannins and polyphenols, some texture to the mouthfeel that we take for granted in our beer. So, you know, boiling the hops gives you some tannins, but we don't just want like bitter soup, you know, so getting the pH drop down a little bit tends to not favor isomerization. And that lets us focus on the aromatics. It's all about the flavor and the aroma, right? And back to Mark's point about sterilization, I don't want to imply that hops have bacteria and bad things on them, but they are something that grows outside. A hop water is not a good it's not a hostile environment the way that beer is. Everybody knows why people drink beer for civilizations. They couldn't trust the water, but you could always trust the beer. But hop water kind of, you know, closes down those protections. And you do hear about some issues with, like, you know, coliforms and things, you know, no botulism, nothing like crazy. But hygiene is very important.
Yeah, certainly, you know, you wouldn't want to make a hop water if you had diarrhea or were vomiting violently.
You don't usually want to do much when
you might be a pass on the brew day on that.
It's another reason we add the acid. If you can get your pH below 4, ideally around 3.8, that's considered food safe, that pH. You're going to kill almost anything that can harm you bacteria-wise. And so not only do we keep the bitterness lower for just pleasure of drinking, but you keep it safe by dropping that pH. So you boil, you add the acid, you're gonna keep things nice and clean and safe.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, because, you know, when we're making beer, you know, yeah, let's say we're 5.2 going into the kettle, right? And then after fermentation, we're like 4.8. But there's something else there. There's alcohol present, right? So, like, you're talking about beer safe, where you, nothing could flourish in there. But since we don't have the alcohol, we pre-acidify to drop that pH, create a hostile environment to drive off or thwart any bacteria.
So where a home brewer can really go nuts is, you know, you don't have to add a food grade acid, but we're recommending it from a food safety perspective. Obviously, that's going to bring a certain, you know, I mean, it's acid is acidic, right? So maybe that
changes the flavor as well.
It changes the flavor. And each acid brings over certain characteristics with it. So you don't have to be married to, you know, lactic, because lactic is the German purity law way, especially if you manufacture it yourself. You could go FOS, getting that more like soda pop snappiness. You could go to malic, which whenever I think of malic, I think of warheads. You know, you could go to
citric,
right? That, then you're getting more into.
Or you could just use lemon juice.
Lemon juice. You could do tartaric, right? Each one, and to say that we've explored all of those, you know, I'd be lying. So that's a nice to do for the ambitious.
But if you look at some
different flavors, see which one you like.
Acid can be a fun thing to play with. I mean, just like you can get acid.
Just talk to the Grateful Dead.
Certainly. Yes.
There's a few posters in here that agree with you.
There's a lot of blacklight posters in here.
But you can create your own blends, you know, malic, tartaric, different proportions, just like a wine blend. And
winemakers love acid. I mean, that's like the whole thing of, you know, the structure of the wine. And but let's not talk about wine any more than that.
But certainly you can, really the point is to make a beverage that tastes good.
Yeah.
Whatever route you go, you know? That's why it should, you know, if you want to add stuff in the back, go for it. It's basically a soda pop at that stage.
So going back to, the boil and calculating our IBUs, we had a conversation about that. There's no sugar present, right? So that affects our BU calculation. So we're targeting 10 IBUs. Again, is that's because of the antibacterial properties of the 10 IBUs right around there?
Just a little extra protection.
Yeah, a little extra protection.
Yeah.
How would, for like a home brewer then, I think the most software out there will allow them to calculate.
From my experience, it's really hard to just kind of guess what your IBU is going to be. It's really, we have a lab that can kind of confirm that. So it's as long as it's in the ballpark. In my experience, it's usually a little higher than whatever it comes out on that.
So let's talk hops then, since we're talking about hops and bitterness. Today we use Nectaron, which I freaking love. What are good hops for hop water? You know, I guess that's kind of a flavor thing, right? But what would you guys recommend, or what are some ones you think would be cool?
All the sea hops.
So Citra, Cascade, Centennial.
Of course, yep. All the hot private varietals are also a good route. You know, be careful with Sabro, as every good brewer is.
Well,
too much coconut lime could be.
No, certainly I think that would be less of a risk than Summit or something.
Something that's got thiols, like a Columbus.
Strata would be good. Strata's
nice. Yeah. Something, you know, it really is. It's the same hops that you understand and know what they do to your beers. And we all know that the hops will express differently in a hazy versus a non-hazy. And New England style hop water is definitely coming, if not already there. But we're going for more of a West Coast, right? So kind of a clean, slightly grapefruit, pine. So all those varieties that you know do that. Simcoe, you know, Mosaic, Citra.
I would say it's going to depend on how you use it as well, where you put it in, if it's going in the boil or if it's going in on the backside. When we first developed Hoppy Refresher years ago, we tried a bunch of different hops, and it surprisingly, some of them were really not good.
Some of them don't work.
Single hop.
What are some of the ones that weren't good?
I think Yukonot
was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it was some that we really, really like in beer.
I love that.
Don't always necessarily translate. So it's a fun thing to play with and trial with your process to figure out which ones work particularly well for the flavor you want.
Yeah. And we also noticed that, like, they would express differently that if you were to, like, have the hops completely purged before having water. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can get different flavors like we did today with the dip hop.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So that was something. So we did the whirlpool hops or boil hops, right? And then we transferred over to the fermenter, and then we did the dip hop. So tell me a little bit about dip hopping.
It's basically something that's out there that people have come up with. You know, not a lot of new things.
It checks a nice food safety box, though, because the first thing you're doing is you're mixing the hops with some hot water.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
over 100.
So we had like 175-ish water.
180 degree water. Yeah. It's probably going to strike, if you will.
Pasteurizing or whatever.
Kind of, yeah. Like what is the old rule? 160 for 15, 20 minutes or whatever, you know.
But they people get pretty deep into it. Like today we basically just did it really quickly and put the slurry in. They say, you know, an hour and a half before you knock out, you want to hydrate. And what that does is it drives off. Myrcene is the most volatile, and certainly we love myrcene, so it seems a little silly to, like, why would you want to drive
that
off?
We want to keep our myrcene because we associate myrcene as the fresh hop character, but then you can also get into your more delicate water soluble, like your geraniol and your linalool.
There's lots of grassy, kind of harsh flavors that can get driven off with that hop dip. And you get really kind of a nice, pure kettle hop kind of experience with a little bit of juiciness that you would get from a dry hop. And again, it's for a home brewer that's really kind of a stability, you know, it's probably a good idea, you know.
Yeah, shelf life down. So another thing we added some yeast, right? Even though we have no real sugar per se present, maybe a little bit from the hops, so what are we doing there?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's why you would see, you know, in our labels, we would say brewer's yeast or whatever. We did notice that there's a difference between hop water with and without.
Whether or not you believe in the what is it, the
Brian transformation,
the beta glucosidases or not, their hops have sugars, to your point. And the belief is that terpenes are munched on by yeast, a yeast being a bag of enzymes, like to quote Dr. Michael Lewis on that. It's very unglorious, but also very true. A yeast is a bag of enzymes. And those enzymes in there are working on the hops, or so the thought goes. You're either a biotransformation camp, yes, or camp not. It's very binary.
But we did, just like that little vessel that we used to do the other weird process. Yep.
So talk through it again real quick. Like, what did we do there?
I saw an Austrian brewer do that
technique.
So it's
an Austrian hop blast is what we'll call it.
It was a way to add a hop aroma when your beer was finished, but you just felt it needed something, but you didn't want to tip in oils or anything, because those have that real just unidimensional, I added oil and I can't live with myself kind of thing. So it was like a cool workaround that I saw a guy do that in Austria and was like, That's bitching.
It was similar to the hop dip.
Yeah.
Smaller vessel, something that you could do in a corny. Basically, we put just not even half a pound of hops. Mm-hmm. Hot water, similar to the hop dip.
Big headspace.
We drove out a little bit of the first
bit of the
headspace, and then basically we're going into a carb stone, replacing the headspace in the tank that has the regular oxygen with the scented
terp infused CO2.
Yeah,
I like that.
Terp infused CO2. Yeah. AKA the Austrian Blast.
The Austrian Blast.
You heard it here first.
Don't look it up on Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, there might be up there with the, yes. We were able to do small trials, which is always a good idea.
Yeah, we did. Yep.
And yeah.
And different of those vessels, some with yeast, some without, different hop varieties.
You can, it's, yeah.
You can taste through all of them and say, okay, we like what this tastes like, but not that one. Yeah. And then blend the best ones.
And what would happen is the same kind of grassy, kind of harsh flavors. Yeah. You'd get less of them.
It always sucks when the end result is just like, it smells like, you know, the hop storage
bales
compartment of some sort of brewery. You just got generic, all the hop, you know, you want to have the special nuances. You want to carve out those, we call them the minors. So the little terpenes and the relationship of some terpenes to another, that's what makes the varietal special. You want to capture those, you know, as best as you can. And of course, you're going to do that best by doing a wet hop, hop water. But obviously, it's February right now, and we would need to be in New Zealand or Australia, which you guys got a budget for that? That's sounding pretty cool.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
I do know someone from Doe's who did one of those, though.
Oh, with the
Mr. Birdman, yeah.
Was that Birdman?
Yeah,
it was a mutual friend of ours. Yeah.
Doe's home brewers.
Yeah, he had some, I think we gave him, there were the hops that we had from Harvest, we gave him. Yeah, and it turned out good, yeah.
All right, so we've got some great ways to make hop water. We talked about that. I want to talk a little innovation. So we did this today in the innovation lab. You guys have a whole lab or a brew house dedicated to innovation. You guys were ahead of the curve on the hop water and the hi-fi like we talked about. What do you feel the next trend is? You know, where are we going in regards to innovation? And then also, I do want to talk about the health aspect. I love that. Like we were talking earlier about, you know,
Getting older.
Everybody thinks we drink a lot of beer, but we're getting older.
Yeah.
And, you know, like stuff like this is attractive to me. So kind of a two-part question, but like, let's talk about innovation and health too, because I think it's important to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, of course, we live in a time where it feels like everybody's doing everything. The great convergence, if you give it a name. So the big blurring between, you know, Bev Alk and not, and like the big soda companies, you know, Pepsi and Coca-Cola, Monster, everybody's jumping in, mixing everything. You know, you watched Boston Beer Company become Boston Beverage Company, and, you know, the rise and fall of seltzers. And it's you know, really hard to say. The only comforting thing that rattles around in my brain was said by a wise hop farmer whose name is Steve Peralt. And I asked him if he felt threatened by a beverage like a seltzer. This is at a time when seltzers appeared unstoppable 3 years ago in summer. And he said, I think people, because, you know, seltzer uses no hops and uses no malt. It's literally like, it should be a crime, anti-beer. But he said, I think people that like beer will just drink beer. And every time the going gets tough, as we watch our industry just flounder and do everything and just do things that were unthinkable 5-10 years ago, I just hear Steve Peralt's comment in my head, people that like beer will just drink beer. And then I meditate and I feel better.
That's awesome. I'm glad you said that, because I was having a conversation with someone in the industry the other day, and we were talking about like seltzers and that, and, you know, hazy IPAs to somewhat, you know, and the whole vibe was like, anything we do to drive people away from beer is bad for us. I've always been of the impression or mind thought of like, make something and make it good and put passion into it, and you know, like, seltzers are cool, you know, it's like, you know, it's like making mead. There's nutrients in there.
What are the seltzer, what are the seltzer companies doing right now and putting all their bets on? Vodka versions of what they just took something that's categorized as beer and, like, red herring the whole bunch of Bud Light drinkers and hoodwink them away from beer and into spirits, because now all the big seltzer guys, their big bet for the future is vodka versions of what they made before from sugar. So to me, that did beer a disservice.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it wasn't until I had that conversation that I'm like, man, there maybe there is something there. We are driving people away, and, you know, will they come back? I love your comment of, like, beer drinkers will always be beer drinkers.
Yep.
And I believe that as well.
Yep.
Yeah, we went from the, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we were still, as brewers, we were still champions of, you know, hundreds of years of history and telling the consumer what's good. That's back when there was, you know, a lot less breweries. Now there's so many breweries, the pie is not any bigger, just more slices.
Same number of drinkers, if not less.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Brewery count keeps going up. It's less pieces for everybody.
So we are, you know, we are reactive to what the consumers want, and part of the innovation lab is to be able to draw from that, but also, you know, come with our newer ideas. But the idea is that we'll come up with rough sketch ideas and be able to put them into a form that will translate into the larger brewery. We showed you earlier that our previous pilot brew house was an 80-barrel brew house, mm-hmm. which is just, you know, 160 kegs. It's a lot of kegs. This will be, you know, this 8-barrel brew house, maybe it's too small.
16 kegs. Yeah.
But before that, I was called the wort thief, you know, for the last 7 years. I was creating new beers, using alternative yeast, alternative hops, but pulling from the wort stream that was, you know, knocking out every day. So everything I made was either a modified, you know, a little something, or if I wanted it blonde, or, you know, and different beers if I, you know, so.
So what do you guys have, like, where do you see the future in the innovation lab, if you guys could even share it with me?
Like, we don't know the future.
Yeah, where
if I did, like, I wouldn't tell you though.
But old IPA, right? Like, yeah,
it's really impossible
to, it feels like IPAs are, they're here to stay, but they're also maybe at fever pitch. I mean, you know, one of your questions is going to be desert island style. Yeah. For me, I definitely prefer, I like West Coast IPAs. I could drink those till the day I die. But, you know, you mentioned health and wellness. So, you know, a trend towards more functional. And you see a lot of, like, token functional, where they take every buzzword, like Mark would joke, ashwagandha. You know, we made an ashwagandha with enough in it to really be in it. And we were like, people might not like that taste, right? So people would just put a flake of it in there just to put it on the label, you know, new tropics, or what is the other buzzword?
Adaptogens.
Like, this stuff is dumb.
Part of
it's pure marketing, but if you could actually do it and have it be real, right? I think there could be an interest for that. I also feel that homebrewers who have been brewing, you know, double IPAs their whole life, and now they're clocking over into their 40s, the guys like us, they might be interested in you know, because everything always kind of starts out, you know, in your kitchen. You know, that's where we started out.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's just like the like I was saying, we used to tell people, you know, what was good. The homebrew community is keeping that alive, keeping the styles alive, keeping innovation alive. I mean, really, you know, that it's a relief to see that there's still homebrewers, because, you know, brewers have lost their way. We're reactive, but we're also, you know, fully aware that just because you make good beer doesn't mean it sells. Marketing is very cutthroat out there.
I mean, it's like just adding, you know, fruit to everything. Like, imagine the 2010 version of ourselves you know, that would just make us shudder.
Oh, yeah, we would say, oh, we would never use natural flavor. Why would you use that? We'll just cut up all the tangerines we want.
What was it? Before that, it was eat the fruit.
Oh, yeah.
Smoke the weed, drink the beer. And then now all that's gone out the window. You can drink the weed. You know, get your cert. Yeah, it's the great convergence, you know, even with like kombucha. And, you know, we make a kind of a rainforest tea now.
Brewers had
to get creative to engage the consumer.
It's a good point you said with like the homebrewers too. Like, they don't have to sell the beer, so they can experiment and do whatever the heck they want.
They are their own customer.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we unfortunately might be. Before, we thought that what we liked was like what other people would like. And then now, you know, we get reminded like, well, maybe that's not true anymore.
Well, yeah, you come,
and that's sad.
Yeah, because brewers are like, oh, I want to do like a smoked porter or something, you know, and then it sits in the warehouse for eight months.
Oh yeah, an amber ale. Like,
so brewer-led innovation
starts opening a brewery and doing a red ale, a porter, you know.
Sounds like when I started drinking. That was
exactly
exciting.
Like these were. But there are people that want those beers.
We would love to
see more red ale.
We'd love to brew different styles and do all that kind of stuff.
I think that makes our job to listen to the consumer, make it better, and guide them back. And it's incredibly hard to do. If I knew how to do that better, I'd probably be somewhere else sitting on a tropical island. But if you can listen to the consumer and they might say something really just crazy, you say, okay, is there a seed there? And then we take that and we work our magic and say, here's your idea, but here's how we make it.
And I think, but people also appreciate authenticity. You know, we've definitely all had the like, whoa, like look at this crazy can with these crazy ingredients. And then you're like, that just tastes like marketing. You know, it tastes like marketing. It tastes like the marketing department, like, you know?
No one wants to drink the marketing department. They would prefer to drink the grumpy brewer's department.
So going back to the health and wellness, because we're talking hop water today, but I had a killer non-alcoholic beer on tap earlier, which is great. And as I get older, you know, things like pale ale is kind of one of my favorite styles because lower ABV, but there's the hops there. But like the non-alcoholic, is that selling good for you guys? Is there a market there as well?
It's the fastest growing, but on a very small base. And you have to imagine that eventually the United States will begin to resemble a more established Western culture, so more like Europe, where, you know, non-alcoholic beer is everywhere. It's very well developed. Drinking and driving laws are more strict. The limits are lower. You know, we've been steadily kind of lowering ours, and health and wellness. You know, the ability, also spacers, right? I used to think that a session IPA was a spacer, you know? So if you're gonna drink a Maximus, you better have a daytime afterwards, or it's gonna be nighttime for you. But now you can go, you know, daytime IPNA or the Nano Juicy that you had, which these are about, 0.4. So, you know, they're perfect for, you know, gonna have to drive later situations.
Or my favorite thing to do when I go visit my buddies in the East Bay is I'll do half and half, half IPA, half IPNA, and then I have a nice, 3% beer.
A little 3%.
3% beer.
Yeah, we always thought table beers, so-called, were gonna take off, but it's that's that weird alcohol percentage right in the middle, like between 2 and 3.5.
Nobody wants to buy those.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
And right now.
Them, but yeah, I guess the general public.
Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, said, was that Newton? And it's like, all right, NA is the fastest growing category, so that's like, you know, nearly nothing. And all of a sudden, bam, super high octane is also triples and doubles, you know. It's younger season right now, you know. So.
I remember, I mean, when you talk about what you said, like what's your favorite beer, little something has always been my beer that I just drink the shit out of. Like, you know, I'll start drinking it at 11 a.m. on, you know, if I'm camping or something. That's my daytime.
Yeah, daytime at 7.5.
But then when we came out with daytime, I was like, frustrating. It was kind of, I just kind of had to drink it twice as fast. So So that's my take on session beers, at least, is yeah. I drink them twice as fast, personally.
All right, guys, thanks for having us out. It was an amazing day. Thanks for showing us around the facility. Looking forward to coming back and trying this hop water when it's ready. So thanks again.
Cheers.
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 We're empty.
Oh, yeah. We can't cheers with empty glasses.
Yeah, I'm like,
bad luck.